Welcome to The Quantum Pod, a podcast by Zapata. In this episode, our Chief Marketing Officer, Catherine, sits down to discuss the parallels between machine learning and quantum enterprise transformations with Dana Jones, a transformative software CEO herself.
Welcome to the Quantum Pod. Today we have Dana Jones. How are you today, Dana?
I'm well, Catherine. How are you?
I'm well. So Dana, you've been a board member at Zapata Computing for about 6 months now, and people describe you as a growth-minded CEO with a track record of successfully transforming global enterprise software companies into innovative market leaders. You've worked in both private and publicly traded enterprise software companies. You're currently president and CEO at RealPage, a data analytics and software provider to the real estate industry. And previously, you were president and CEO of Sparta Systems. You're also on several enterprise SaaS companies' boards. And needless to say, we're lucky to have you on board the pod and on our board at Zapata.
Oh, thanks, Catherine. I think it's a privilege to be on the board of Zapata.
We're lucky to have you. So, Dana, we have a few rituals at the beginning of each pod. So this is your pod today. Set the stage for us. What is in the pod with you?
Well, I have my dog here, Brisket. He's a Maltipoo. I'm sure, going to be mesmerized by our conversation, and then always a good cup of coffee.
Nice. Okay. And what do you personally find most interesting about quantum computing, Dana?
I don't know what there isn't to find interesting about quantum computing. I have an engineering degree. I'm certainly not a quantum scientist, but the potential to solve problems that have never been able to be solved with classical computing, to me, is so exciting. Someone who's been in the tech industry my whole career, there are natural boundaries that we've hit until now. And if you think about how quantum computing can break through some of the bottlenecks that AI or machine learning have hit, we can solve problems that have never been solved before. And it's just so exciting to me.
And what's the most revolutionary aspect when you think about quantum?
I think it's the ability to model and optimize very common problems that face every industry, every business today. You even think about the traveling salesman problem. It's a classic computing problem that tries to find the most efficient route, but it has huge implications for global supply chains. And our global supply chains are more and more complicated. They, of course, have more and more challenges these days with COVID and everything else. And the ability to apply quantum in a way to slash billions of dollars and get things to market more quickly, more efficiently, really can change the entire way that businesses run. And it's a very practical application that I don't know that folks really appreciate, the fact that there's things we just can't solve today, and now we can with the use of quantum computing.
It's super exciting to think of how these grueling, sometimes more boring use cases too, can have such CSR and really interesting upsides as well. So when you think about fuel costs, when you think about being more efficient, it's not just about the business outcomes and the savings. It's really about the impact of how we are living and moving things on this planet.
No, absolutely. And also the ability to simulate is incredibly powerful. Having spent a few years in the pharmaceutical space, the whole drug discovery and manufacturing process is constrained. If you think about applying this technology to identifying cures or treatments for so many illnesses, I think about that a lot. And even once those drugs are developed, the ability to get them to market faster is in fact a distribution challenge. And it's a perfect use case for how quantum can literally save more lives.
Super exciting. I especially think about the near-term horizons of all these industries and what are the horizontal use cases that can translate from one vertical to the next. I think that's where we're really trying to help our customers be first movers and get some business impact before we can move on to the simulation and longer term use cases.
Yeah, I could not agree more. Yep, absolutely. Crawl, walk, run.
Okay, Dana, switching gears, can you tell us a bit about your journey at Sparta?
Sure. Sparta Systems, the market leader in quality management systems, really the pioneer that created the category of quality management, serving regulated industries, primarily pharmaceutical and medical device. So we had 85% of the top pharmas in the world as our customers, and more than two-thirds of the top medical device companies used our solutions. And a quality management system is really used to help ensure both the safety and the compliance of getting either drugs or devices through the manufacturing process and released out into the marketplace. And it's a fairly complex process that's governed, obviously, by a lot of regulations. So you think of things like managing an audit, complaint handling, taking corrective actions midway through a manufacturing process, and then doing the investigations and root cause analysis to fix it. Quality management systems are embedded actually in the majority of the core processes within these manufacturers and are critical for them to produce goods that do save lives. We were historically an on-premise software company, and as I joined, the goal was to transform the company into a digital solution and really think about quality moving from being very reactive, doing the research, the investigation, holding the batch after something happens, versus leveraging AI and modern digital platforms, a SaaS platform, to enable quality management to be more proactive. Game changer in these markets. Company was growing north of 15%, really transforming the industry once again and viewed as an innovator, which is what attracted Honeywell. Honeywell actually acquired us. They were interested in building out and expanding their presence given the solutions they have in the manufacturing space. So this was the next logical step for Honeywell. So Sparta Systems is now a Honeywell company and still very well regarded as the market leader in this space.
Great. And what did customers need to do to be AI ready? To adopt your solution?
Yeah, to be AI ready really means that there needs to be an acknowledgement and an understanding that there is a better way to solve the current problems or to operate the business with more insights. And to do that effectively, what I saw both at Sparta, also at Sabre and other industries I was in, you have to have control of your data. You have to know where you can get your data. You have to understand your data and apply that data to very practical use cases, near-term use cases, problems that can be solved. And you also need to ensure that the business and the IT organization is aligned. Being AI ready to me means you really understand what it is you're trying to solve for. You have a practical approach and you're willing to fail and learn and pivot. There's no magic sauce. I think those are the things that I have at least seen in my experience.
Here we have a twofold definition of AI ready. First, the technical side. You have to know where your data comes from. And then second, the philosophical side. You have to know that there's a better way, namely AI in this case, or quantum in another case, and have the mindset that you're ready to try, fail, and get back up along the way.
And with your customer relationships, how much teaching them to fish did you do versus doing the fishing for them?
Well, at Sparta, most of our customers were enterprise customers, but we also had smaller customers. And the enterprise customers really did have capability. They typically had large IT organizations. They had typically had data science teams. Oftentimes what we found is they had gone off and tried to build things on their own, and it wasn't necessarily successful. I saw the same thing at the large airlines. So a lot of what we did was to provide the software that would still enable them to approach the problems that they wanted to solve, but empower them to do it on their own. So we didn't provide services, but in the early days, we certainly would partner with them, help them identify the most powerful use cases, help them structure what it was they were going to accomplish so that they could have successful results. Because ultimately, it is important to build trust and leverage AI to solve problems and then demonstrate to the business that it, in fact, did solve those problems. One of the biggest barriers is the fear of both change, but the fear that the technology may not be accurate. And if you think about Sparta Systems, it was a regulated industry. So starting to trust a software solution that would prioritize the most important complaints coming in from your patients. They had always done that with human beings. They would manually go through all the complaints and prioritize it, but that wasn't very efficient. Leveraging AI, we could categorize and escalate the complaints that had the highest risk and needed the most attention. Well, at first that was uncomfortable. So allowing the solution to augment the human beings and allow the human beings to actually accept the recommendation or play a role was instrumental as well, because then there wasn't that fear factor. You could also start to build trust and conviction in the results that the solution was delivering.
Super interesting. You're hitting on themes that we are living right now at this inflection point in quantum, where there's an element of trust. There's an element of which use case do we start with? How do we outperform the incumbent solution that we're currently using? And where are the human beings in the loop? Because especially in these early days where we're still managing the hardware, the software, how it all works together, bringing in the classical portions, these are all very reminiscent themes of the life we're living at Zapata with our customers.
Yep, absolutely. You nailed it. Those were the same problems even 10 years ago as the businesses I partnered with were starting to adopt AI and machine learning.
Now, Dina, were there infrastructure and tooling needs that the customers have, or was your solution able to come in and kind of plug and play?
Here, Dana says it depends. One of the key requirements for a successful application of machine learning solutions to data problems is
they could actually harness and access and normalize their data and have one source of the truth.
Some industries could do that better than others, but no matter how good the initial data collection and management process was,
you absolutely have to work with the software, the infrastructure, and the systems that are in place. There is not a company in the world where you can rip and replace. That's the misnomer, and that's where I've seen organizations make mistakes. But they would stand up a team of data scientists in a theoretical lab, and in a lab is not reality. They have large-scale operating systems that run their business, and the solutions have to be able to integrate with and understand and add value to those systems and not just operate in a lab setting. That's just not reality.
Well, and this is something that's exacerbated with quantum, because the devices today are accessed remotely, and it is hard to get the quantum device to perform with the classical portions of the software and hardware in a timely fashion, in a secure fashion in the enterprise. So I feel like the point you made about you can't rip and replace, you have to augment, is even more true in quantum and will be for the next decade. Can you say more, Dana, about the value of working with the classical and not displacing existing systems, but augmenting them?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's everything. There are decades worth of systems that businesses and verticals around the world use. And these systems in many cases are really old, but still very effective. And organizations are not going to spend money to replace those systems. That's how they run their business. So there really is no future solution if it cannot integrate and be interoperable and augment what's already there. It just simply won't work. It can become a science project, but it's never going to enable full-scale adoption and leveraging the benefits and capabilities within the workflows that are actually going to benefit the businesses each and every day. There's not a CIO in the world, there's not a CEO in the world that's going to listen to a recommendation that does not take their current environment into consideration. Furthermore, if you can't work with what's there, there's no way to build the trust and get the proof points that you absolutely have to get the support to deploy these sorts of systems at scale. It's a non-starter.
So that sounds like something we experience at Zapata, where we need to prove different milestones of performance of a quantum or quantum-inspired classical solution. Is that what you're talking about, where, you know, from a proof of concept to a prototype to a pilot, looking to prove different outcomes at each of those steps to get the customer to still invest?
Yes, that's absolutely. I'm talking about that. But I'm also talking about once they make a decision to invest. But the upfront, the proof points, the traction, that there is no conversation about a broad scale deployment without that. You absolutely have to crawl, walk, run, identify use cases, prove the technology, prove the answer, show the validation of that. And with those proof points, that's where you can start to expand the models, expand the deployment, expand the use cases. And in parallel with that, the organizational capabilities start to mature around how do you do that? How do you leverage systems? How do you leverage the talent? What are the business processes? All of that is necessary to get traction. The notion of a big bang, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work in any setting, and it certainly doesn't work with an application of quantum.
So putting on a customer hat, which I guess is the hat you wear every day, in adopting new technology, what would you be looking for out of quantum, and how would you pursue that, getting a little bit more tangible about those steps?
Yeah, for if I were deploying quantum, I would have a specific set of business problems that I thought quantum could help me solve that were very real problems. And I would look for a partner who understood the practical realities of my business, of my capabilities, and who could partner with me to bring their capabilities to bear in partnership with my team. Because part of deploying quantum is building the right talent, building the right teams, aligning those teams the right way, getting the key stakeholders. Many of these business problems touch so many parts of the business that you need the stakeholders involved. It needs to be their idea and a partner who not only understands the technology, but also understands my business, but also understands the change management and how critical it is to get the buy-in, because that's the point at which you truly get the adoption and the support of any new technology, especially something as groundbreaking as quantum. And I would expect a partner that could demonstrate traction on maybe some things that weren't, you know, as explosive in nature, but that we could get the trust that the technology was working, the models were truly effective, the models could learn. And from that, you move from maybe more simple use cases to more complex use cases.
Okay, there was a lot of good information in that answer. So let's do a quick recap of the steps you should take as an enterprise getting started with quantum. First, have a set of problems, identify some use cases. Zapata already has many of the near-term and long-term use cases identified. Second, look for a partner that, one, understands your problems and use cases, and two, can demonstrate traction on something maybe less explosive. Three, work with a partner to bring knowledge to bear on the problems. And finally, get the buy-in needed to further apply the transformation.
Dana, what importance do you think time horizon plays? So specifically, we think about quantum along a trajectory where today's devices have very specialized jobs. They're not general purpose and they won't be for some time. How important is it to do things that are near term and can go all the way to production versus prove out more research type concepts for the longer term? Or are both equally important?
I believe as a business person, the former is definitely more important because you have to do it to learn it. If you wait for the technology to be at a mature state, you're going to miss a competitive window. You need to leverage what's available today. You need to leverage and get traction and understand. It is learning. Whether the algorithms are learning or the human beings are learning, that process just takes time, and getting started immediately is imperative. But getting started in a way that you can develop the models, you can develop the processes so that as the quantum technology becomes more mature, you can very readily take advantage of it without having to go through the steps of any large change management initiative that naturally takes time. You can get that behind you and quickly then plug in the new capabilities. You've got a competitive advantage over everyone.
So Dana, building on that, these are fairly early days for quantum hardware, and we're not sure which modality will win, which partner of ours will come out ahead. How do you handle that as an enterprise?
Well, I think it's important to maintain an agnostic approach. If there's a way to have a software platform that is developed with that in mind, that's open, that can be deployed and used right now to solve problems, to build models, to develop those use cases, ingest the data, but it's built in a way that the source of the data can change, which it will change, and regardless of the device that's prevalent, that wins, you should not have to rip and replace and start over. You absolutely are going to have a competitive advantage if you can use the tools and software platforms and the methodologies and algorithms, regardless of the device. That's going to give you the best competitive advantage and flexibility right now and in the long term.
Okay, you're reinforcing a lot of our design principles for Orchestra here, which I feel like you know too much as a board member, but we agree philosophically, and we're trying to give that flexibility to our customers and with our hardware partners because it's tough and we don't know exactly how this is going to roll out, but we're all pushing in the same direction.
I was just going to say, whether it's quantum or anything else, every software company that I've led, we've had open platforms. Having an open platform that doesn't constrain you to a particular stack is a competitive advantage. So it's really not just because I'm a Zapata board member that I would say that. I have seen it in action and certainly understand that you cannot be constrained by the technology that you select.
And what analogs can you point us to learn from some of the companies you've led or sat on boards for?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. The current company I'm part of, RealPage, we're an open platform. So yes, we have a portfolio of solutions that do everything from websites to CRM, the back office, all sorts of things. But we also have the core system, the accounting system, that enables our customers to select other solutions. If in fact they think there's another solution that better serves their needs, we don't want to force them to only use our solutions. That's really the only way you can deploy software. Even Sparta had integration with other solutions, whether they were competitive solutions or just the entire ecosystem. I think it's critical to always have an open platform.
And does open mean open source or just interoperable?
Open, in my definition, means interoperable. You can integrate. You can keep your core, but swap out other parts of the value chain if you want to use other applications.
Okay, so that modularity.
The modularity, exactly.
Okay, so lots of parallels in software in general for the enterprise, but in particular, going back to AI and quantum for enterprise, we've hit on use case led. We've hit on how the talent pool is small and there's a need to teach as well as implementing the software. And you started talking about early adoption and getting started now. Can you say more about any learning from the AI revolution that you think translates to the quantum revolution in terms of starting now when it still feels fairly early to some?
Yeah, I think there's lots of examples without naming names. When I was at Sabre, you know, airlines were our customers, and there were many airlines that, you know, tried to build their own AI solutions, their own data lakes, and they would fail because they didn't understand how to take advantage of the technology in a practical way. Now, that failure helped them realize that they needed to partner. So there was progress in that, but it was important for them to really understand the business purpose and see where this new technology could fit in. It's also important to get traction early because sometimes the senior executives, they don't want to hear about the next big tech thing, right? They want to understand how you're going to solve a problem, how it's going to make the business better, their customers better served. So the faster you can start to apply a technology in a narrow way and get true business benefit, the faster you're going to get internal traction to get the funding that you need to solve bigger and better problems. So I am a huge advocate of crawl, walk, run. I'm a huge advocate of ensuring that there's an integrated approach between IT, data science, and the business. And I think it's critical to have very tangible milestones so that you can build the trust internally and start to ultimately create a situation where instead of pushing a technology, there's all of a sudden a pull from across the organization to apply the technology to new and different things. That's where you know you've started to cross the bridge.
Dana used an interesting word there, describing the initial application of quantum as narrow. This echoes a lot of what we've been saying about hype here at Zapata. You can't expect that quantum computing will be some sort of magic wand that fixes every problem that touches. The initial application has to be very specific if it is to have any chance at success.
Okay, you also mentioned failure and learning from failure. Do you think in enterprise adoption of these new technologies, there is room to fail or it's okay to experiment?
Oh, absolutely. It's okay to experiment. You have to fail to try new things. I think what's important is recognizing quickly when you're going to fail, why you failed, and to course correct. You have to develop experience, right? It only comes from experience that you can develop the muscle that you need to learn and iterate in how to apply a new technology, how to structure differently. A lot of times these technology, it's so disruptive that it changes the basic workflows of how a business operates. And the human side of it is absolutely critical. So the faster you can lean in and get the experience, the faster you're going to move to a position where you can gain value.
So Dana, you just mentioned IT, the business, and data science teams working together. Why did you mention that, or what do you expect to see from that trifecta?
Well, I mentioned that because many times the failures that I've observed throughout my career, regardless of industry, is that a lot of times the R&D teams go off and do something in a vacuum, or they do it in a lab and there's a separate group and they're working under perfect conditions. And then when they reveal the answer, while interesting, it falls apart because it can't be deployed in production. Businesses are complex. Systems are very complex. And you have to work together within the reality of the business. Otherwise, doing experiments in a lab are just that. They're simply experiments. You're not actually moving the needle and maturing the organization and adopting solutions that are going to be successful as you scale and implement across your entire ecosystem.
Now, this isn't to say that R&D is useless. Quite the opposite, in fact. R&D is very important in discovering new applications. The issue only arises when what is researched and developed never gets applied to production and adopted to make the business workflow better and more efficient.
So we have two super hard jobs as a quantum ecosystem, getting the quantum devices to work and create value, and then doing that within the enterprise engineering requirements.
Absolutely. Not an easy task.
No. No. But that is what we've all signed up to do. when it comes to deploying and scaling this new technology, what are the major pitfalls enterprises should watch out for? I think we've hit on a couple of them, but are there any particular pain points, especially from AI adoption?
I think I've mentioned most of them. The biggest pitfall I see is the one we just talked about, IT or R&D going off and doing something separate from the business. I think that's the single biggest pitfall, believe it or not. The other common pitfall that I hope organizations learned through the AI phase is do not go boil the ocean, right? If you boil the ocean, you're just going to overcomplicate. You're going to waste too much time. Identify the use cases and be very intentional about that. And with that focus and that intention, you're going to get traction much faster. You're going to get clearer business results. And from that, you can build momentum.
And Dina, I'm not sure I want to share this externally because it's some pretty good secret sauce, but how do you choose the business champions? Is it based on use case or based on those humans?
Oh, it's definitely based on the humans. You've got to have an executive sponsor who is collaborative, is willing to take risk and learn. These are uncharted territories. They also have to be structured, right? You have to take a structured approach with very tangible milestones that you can learn and adjust along the way. And I would pick the business sponsor that's going to be most capable of picking a strong external partner, someone who's not just enamored by buzzwords or technology in a lab, but who's really been there and done that and has lived through the pitfalls of what happens when you deploy software technology that doesn't take the complexities of the enterprise into account. That's a person I would pick to sponsor this. And to me, that's definitely the most important.
So someone who's gone into it before and will enter this eyes wide open, understand what it's really going to take to get to impact.
Absolutely.
Dana, one theme we keep hitting up against is workforce development because the pool of quantum talent is so tiny, which is like AI, but even a little more acute because the hardware is coming online, the software is coming online, and this depth of talent takes a long time to develop. What advice do you have for enterprises looking to build a quantum capability?
Now, I do think that that is a challenge, and I think it's important for enterprises to get ahead of it now. My thought would be to partner with someone who's very capable so that you understand what good looks like. And from that, you can start to develop your internal talent pool. You never know where you're going to find these folks. And the faster you can develop an interest and a program around that to give tangible experience, tangible tools, tangible training, it is going to set you ahead, but it's definitely going to take time.
One thing we often work with customers on is reformulating a problem to be suitable for quantum, because it's not just plugging in a computer on the back end. It's completely rewiring the problem to be solved. And so that's something that you can't really outsource for most customers. They want to internalize that capability. Do you think, is there any way to do that aside from just rolling up your sleeves and practicing?
I really think practice makes perfect, so to speak. A lot of this is trial and error and learning by doing. In a space like quantum that's changing and evolving so quickly, a lot of this, I think, is going to be smart minds who have the aptitude, certainly, and skill set to learn these new things. But where you're going to really get the benefit is where they can learn on the job, right? As opposed to learning in a classroom. And that on-the-job development, the trial and error, and working with a talented partner, I think is the most practical way. And then marrying that with scalable solutions where you can get leverage from that talent, to me, I think that's going to be what's most important.
Dana, I know you saw our recent report on enterprise adoption of quantum computing. Was there anything in there that surprised you?
No, actually, I think the report was spot on and very consistent with my experience throughout my career. The one thing that really stood out to me that really hit home was the fact that 49% of respondents are saying the biggest hurdle to quantum adoption was the complexity of integrating the quantum computing with the existing IT stack. And I'm glad that folks see that as such a barrier, because I can't underscore enough that complexity and how critical that is. I feel like that's the life that I have lived throughout my entire enterprise software career.
If you want to learn more about some of the incredible challenges that we're tackling when it comes to combining quantum and classical infrastructure, make sure to check out our blog post about the classical elephant in the quantum room. I've left a link in the show notes so you don't have to go looking for it.
Okay, Dana, so wrapping up, how would you like to see quantum benefit humanity?
Catherine, there are so many ways I would love to see quantum benefit humanity. It is tough to pick. But I'd have to say the drug discovery process, it's a difficult, time-consuming process that I think is a perfect application for quantum, and anything we can do to compress those cycles and not only discover the drugs, but then get them to production and distributed in a safe way, to me is the optimal quantum use case that I think would make me very happy and make a world of good in saving lives around the world.
Agree. And there's lots of opportunity across that entire value chain.
Yes, all the way from discovery through the process of getting the drug refined, and then the manufacturing and distribution process, unfortunately, sometimes is just as complicated. So anything quantum can do to compress that cycle is going to have just such a positive impact on humanity.
Dana, I can't thank you enough for spending the time with us today. Your realism and practicality in terms of what the customer needs to do to adopt this has been really helpful in our board meetings and all our interactions, and we hope that the Quantum Pod audience feels the same. Thank you again for your time.
Well, thanks for having me, Catherine. I appreciate it.
I hope you've enjoyed this conversation between Dana and Catherine as much as I have. One big takeaway I'm sure I'll remember is that even though adoption might seem slow at first, it's a necessary part of crawl, walk, run, as Dana puts it. If you found this episode interesting, share this podcast with the hashtag #QuantumPod and tell us what you liked about it. Be sure to like the podcast wherever you listen to it, subscribe, and maybe even leave a review if you're feeling generous. Until next time, this is Ethan Hansen reminding you that quantum computers are just like other computers, only quantumer.